Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, bonjour. In Spain, hola. In Italy, ciao. In Egypt, ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, akwaba. In Nigeria, peleo. In South Africa, sawubona. In Senegal, nanga def. In Kenya, jambo. In Israel, shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, assalamu alaikum. Greetings. And may peace be upon you all.
The Female Solution Global Radio TV Show invites you to an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. Tuesdays, Self-Care with Jody Susan. Wednesdays, Repairing Broken Families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, Health and Well-Being with Beata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. First Saturday, Success Strategies with Jana. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on Relationships. Third Saturday, Move Around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, Wisdom with Mama D. Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part of the solution.
Tune in to Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green on Thursdays at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear great topics and stories on grief and turn you into victory. Join Dr. Debbie Green to listen to stories of triumph and learn how to overcome. You are not alone in your life, and there is hope in the darkest hour. This is your time to learn strategies and solutions to improve your life. It's your time. So join Dr. Debbie Green with Soulful Solutions and call in on Thursday at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time at 515-605-9325 with comments and questions. Look to hear from you real soon.
And thank you all for joining us on this Thursday edition of the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif, co-hosting today for Dr. Debbie Green. And we're going to take a look at some soulful solutions today. question is, how do we end generational curses? Have you had something that seems to keep going on in your family generation after generation after generation? Maybe it's something like sexual abuse. There's always someone in the family who emerges as a child molester, and it destroys those in the family who have been victimized by it. And yet the family can't seem to eradicate that trait. Perhaps it's alcoholism. Someone in the family is addicted to alcohol, and they disrupt every family gathering. And somehow it keeps happening in every generation. Somebody becomes the family drunk. Why can't we make it stop? Perhaps there's wave after wave after wave of teenage pregnancies by men who don't have the capacity to act as husbands or fathers. And so each generation of women keep choosing those same undeveloped men to father their children. How do we make it stop? Maybe we've got a family where a parent has served time in prison, and somehow the very same thing happens to their children. Someone commits a crime and goes to prison. In the prisons, there are families. You'll see father and son and grandson. And we wonder, why can't we make it stop? These seem to be generational curses, and it's time for us to take responsibility for what we're choosing to manifest in our lives. We can't keep blaming our parents for what they didn't do, because all parents are examples. They're either examples of what you should do or what you shouldn't do. And it's our responsibility to learn from the lessons they're teaching us with their own lives. It's not easy when we have parents who are demonstrating what you shouldn't do, because it's difficult to teach a negative. You shouldn't drink alcohol and become addicted to the point where this is the way you handle stress, because life is always going to be stressful. Well, you might see them demonstrate that point, but then what is the positive thing you should do when you have stress? If turning to alcohol is not appropriate, if turning to drugs is not appropriate, what are the ways you should learn to handle stress? When you have a dysfunction in your family, and you have lived with that dysfunction, you don't even know it's a dysfunction. You believe it's normal until you get into another environment where other people aren't behaving that way. Unfortunately, many of us never leave the dysfunctional environments in which we were raised. And so we don't know that every household does not have violence, where parents fight and beat each other up and call police. Every household doesn't have someone that is always drunk, never sober, never quite in their right mind, and you're always adjusting to unpredictable mood swings. Everybody doesn't have in their household an absent parent, a parent who can't seem to keep employment or pay bills or be responsible, or even be present to do basic things like go to a parent-teacher meeting. Everybody doesn't have that. But what do they have? And how do you know what the functional thing to do is if all you have experienced is dysfunction? You can't teach what you don't know. You can't lead where you don't go. You can't establish a healthy relationship until you see what one looks like. And this is the challenge that we have in stopping
generational curses. How many people hold on to old ways of doing things simply because it's the way their parents and grandparents did? Even such things as diet. And how many generations have been eating slave food, even though we are no longer forced to eat pig intestines? Wouldn't the high instance of diabetes and the preponderance of people who are on insulin because their bodies have lost the capacity to perform properly because of a poor, high salt content diet, excessive eating of pork, which has flesh that does not release toxins, and so we're eating it. It might have been tradition, the hams, the chitlins. And I'm not being biased because I'm vegetarian. I am being proactive because in my family runs diabetes. But I have chosen for it to stop here with me. I do not have it. And I have established a diet to ensure that my child will not have it. We have to make a change from what we grew up with if those things are harmful. And if we choose to continue the same harmful pattern, we will experience the same harmful result. How many people growing up in an alcoholic household choose to not drink at all? We label drinking, well, maybe it's social drinking. I just drink with my friends. But truly, our bodies begin to adjust to habitual behavior. And there can be a genetic propensity toward alcohol addiction if that has occurred over generations. And so the best way to ensure that it doesn't happen is to not drink at all. This is a lesson that has to be learned. How many generations does it take before someone says, this curse stops with me now? We want you to call in 515-605-9325. If you are struggling to break away from what seems to be a generational curse, how do you learn what is the correct thing to do when all you may have in your midst is the harmful thing to do? And how can you put forth something different for your children so they don't carry on something that may have been in your family for generations? There are families that have generations of sexual assault, child molestation, pedophilia. And it might be that well-respected elder in the family that has such a wonderful community image and no one wants to say what they do secretly. And so they may have injured emotionally, psychologically, spiritually many members of the family and passed that trait of misshapen sexual impulses on to many members of the family. So how do we heal something that hurtful, especially when people won't talk about it? And they perhaps protect the member of the family that is injuring so many others because that family member is highly respected in the community. When we're ill, we need help. And if we decide that jail isn't what we want to inflict upon one who has caused harm, then how do we get help? Because there has to be an admission of a problem. And something as harmful as sexual assault over generations has long-ranging effects. Often it is at the root of one's alcoholism or drug addiction. Even criminal behavior, repressed anger that erupts because of an injustice, a violation that was never addressed or perhaps was denied. How many have had to keep silent as children because the adult who enacted the violation had to be protected? Where does the anger go when that happens? It doesn't disappear. So we have situations in which people are walking around wounded, and the pain goes somewhere. It doesn't disappear. We'll have some family members that might choose to get help so that they don't pass on this generational curse. And we have others that suppress the pain, and it surfaces somewhere in their lives, some type of dysfunctional behavior, difficulty keeping an intimate relationship, difficulty keeping a job, difficulty living a life that is peaceful and calm because they have no inner peace. What we see in our society are people who are expressing pain, many from generational curses, generational dysfunctions, misbehavior that originated somewhere in the past and was never corrected because it was never properly acknowledged. And there was no healing. There was only suppression. How do we end generational curses? Well, we want you to give us a call, 515-605-9325, and press 1 when you're ready to speak, and we will gladly take your calls. This is not an easy subject for many to address. There's often a sense of loyalty that people feel when it comes to not exposing family members for what they may have done that's harmful. How many have been pressured to keep silent because the person who harmed them was someone that was highly revered? There are those who today are prominent members of the communities in which they live, but there is someone somewhere who is aware that they have caused great pain. Recently, and I don't remember the city, but I happened to see a Facebook post, I believe it was, and a woman exposed that her pastor had sexually assaulted her at the age of 16, and she made this statement in front of the entire church, and her husband stood by her because this had happened perhaps some 15 or 20 years ago when she was a teenager, but she's now a grown adult. And now having the courage to speak up on something that was so painful. And she knew about it. And her brother knew about it. He walked in on the act. And it affected him. It affected her. And she carried that pain all those years. And the pastor of the church tried to frame the incident as a marital indiscretion. But she was 16. This was not adultery. This was rape, sexual assault of a child, a minor, someone who didn't feel empowered enough to speak at that time. And yet, this prominent member of the community was not approached until she felt empowered enough to speak. And even then, she risked being called a liar or having people presume she was just out after money. But she was able to free herself after having spoken what had been suppressed and hidden for years. Often there is pain in the hearts of people who engage in self-destructive behavior, alcoholism, drug abuse, criminal behavior, assaulting others. There is pain because they're not able to speak up and say what happened, because sometimes society won't allow them to, and they get accused of lying. We know from the Me Too movement that there are too many that have experienced sexual assault, and too many prominent people who have engaged in sexual assault. And yet, if we can be honest about such a violation, perhaps we can address what was broken inside of those who were guilty of the assault. And perhaps they can be healed rather than hidden. When one violates another, that expression, which is so damaging, is going to play out in some form in that person's life, whether they perpetrate it on someone else or they seek to self-medicate to get rid of the internal pain. And this is where we see many of our alcohol and drug addictions. So this is how such behavior gets passed down generation after generation after generation. And if no one ever addresses the internal pain, then the pattern never stops. What patterns of behavior are visible when every generation produces someone who has some type of addiction? Addictions are means whereby we seek to self-medicate. And as we've heard before, our brains will naturally produce endorphins that keep us in a state of well-being, unless that process is damaged by some type of emotional trauma. And when that happens, then our brains actually dysfunction and we seek something outside of ourselves to induce that state of well-being to counteract the internal pain we're suffering. And this is how generation after generation we see manifestations of addicted behavior. We may see something else used as a substance to get rid of the pain, but the pattern is the same. Perhaps we had a great-great-grandparent dealing with emotional trauma by using alcohol. And then maybe a few generations later, we have a descendant of that person using heroin. And maybe a descendant later, we have someone else using cocaine. And then perhaps someone decides they don't want to be a drug or alcohol abuser, but they have grown up in an environment of abusive behavior, and so they use food. Food that creates a physical imbalance, food that leads them to perhaps a diabetic state, food that causes them to end up physically harmed and perhaps in a diabetic state, they either die or end up an amputee because they were using food to smother the pain of their emotional trauma. Because the abusive behavior at the root of the addiction was passed down generation after generation after generation. We have to examine ourselves, not for the purpose of being condemning of ourselves, but realizing that we may be continuing a pattern of behavior, not realizing that what we're doing is ensuring that our children and their children are continuing a generational curse. So, more needs to be done than just putting people in prison because they're engaging in destructive behavior. Prison is not a place of healing. It's a place of more abuse. If we really want to fix a problem, we need to heal the hurt. And we need to allow those who are in pain to admit that they are in pain without being condemned for their suffering. We want to take a look at a program for those who are reentering society and look at how we react to those who have caused harm. Can we as a society help to heal the hurt that is affecting future generations by understanding the root cause of the pain and helping the person to heal as opposed to not looking at what their punishment is doing for those they leave behind? Children of the incarcerated often themselves become incarcerated. So if what we're doing to those who violate others is actually a continuous violation, then perhaps we need to change our response and change the purpose of giving people a place to stay in solitude for a time to protect them from themselves and others while they heal, rather than us continuing to inflict more pain on them and their families and continuing what becomes a generational curse of incarceration for crime. If we're adding to the problem, then we will continue to see an escalation of the problem. What we really need is a solution. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll come back and take your calls. You're listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV show. This is Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. We're talking about ending generational curses. Dr. Green, of course, has to see a patient this morning. We're looking forward to your responses as she takes care of that very critical issue. It's important that when someone is in pain, we help them and not harm them with further inflicting of pain. We'll be right back. After this quick break, we want you to stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Naima. We're three black moms. And in case you didn't notice the resemblance, we're also three sisters.
We're going to be coming to you every week, sharing our successes and our mistakes as we navigate our lives as moms, wives,
yes,
sisters, daughters, and of course, black women in today's world.
We'll talk about it all. Race, politics, religion, economics, culture. And we'll take a look at everything from whether or not
you continue to
call
in
numbers,
to
how do you teach your children about sex.
You know, about it. And then you
look for our upcoming book, Growing Up Charles. It's a personal story about our lives growing up in Maple Park on Chicago's South Side. I'm Barbara.
I have from
I'm Cheryl.
From 7 to 9.
And I'm Naima.
We're on a commercial break now.
We're three black moms. Follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Three
okay,
Black
I'll
Moms.
Okay, I'll send the call-in number.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, host John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference, too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection.
Female Solution Global Radio TV Show invites you to an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday morning mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. Tuesdays, self-care with Jody Susan. Wednesdays, repairing broken families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, health and well-being with Beata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. First Saturday, Success Strategies with Jana. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on Relationships. Third Saturday, Move Around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, Wisdom with Mama D. Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part of the solution.
Thank you.
This is Minister Cynthia Marie Williams, spiritual counselor and advisor. I invite you to a private reading in the areas of business, health, finances, relationships. My introductory cost of $20. Please call because there is a higher power that can help me help you. 312-802-4743. Peace and blessings to you all. Call me. 312-802-4743.
About finances, family, health, job, relationships? Are you in pain? Do you feel stuck? If you answered yes to any of these questions, help is available. Don't worry, you're not alone. It's part of the human process. You only feel this way because you haven't mastered the voices in your head. No hype, just down to earth. Solid, workable tools and techniques that you can practice daily. It's really food for the soul, whether you want to learn how not to worry about anything, reverse type 2 diabetes, publish a book, promote your product or service, or just make extra money. To take advantage of the deal of the day, go to ZeldaSpeaks.com or call 312-409-6619. Mention promo code The Female Solution and get free shipping. That's ZeldaSpeaks.com or 312-409-6619. Stop worrying today. Visit ZeldaSpeaks.com.
Watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV show. And if you are joining us online and would like to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325, and press 1 when you're ready to speak, and we will come right to you and get your thoughts. And a little while, we'll be joined by Michael Cannon, who is working with a very powerful reentry program, and he is also involved in promoting the fact that a very prominent athlete is assisting in this program. Prison has its stigma, and many people are dismissed from our society with disdain once they have committed a crime. But it's important that when they re-enter our society, we don't re-injure them by making them continuously pay for a crime they committed. We also need to assist in the healing process as they seek to rebuild a life that was shattered by their serving time in a penal institution. How do we break those generational curses of going to jail generation after generation after generation? Let's go out to our phone lines. Often we blame other people for what happens to us, but how do we take responsibility for ourselves? Area code 314-677. Introduce yourself to our listeners.
Hello, Naima. How are you?
Yes, Bianchi. I'm fantastic. And how are you today?
I'm fine.
Wonderful.
Well, here's the thing. What about the victim? There's emphasis on the perpetrator, but not the victim. The person that's serving time, who did they commit the crime against? Actually, they committed a capital crime, and that crime was committed against the people of the country / state that they're in. Therefore, the capital punishment must be applied. That's the agreement that the people of the state came to agreement on, because they voted and put state legislators into place that drew up the laws and the sentencing. And a prosecutor has the task of carrying out the state statutes. Just recently in Texas, DeSantis removed a prosecutor that was elected, by the way, because he was not carrying out the task that he was elected to, and that was to prosecute those who had committed capital crimes against the people of the state. When Will Smith assaulted Chris Rock, he not only committed a grievous act against Chris Rock, he violated a standing statute in the state of California. It wasn't hearsay, like when a police comes to a scene and one person say he did it and another person say no, he did it. It was there on film for the prosecutors to view. He should be in jail right about now. And you know, another thing, you was talking about rape, and you indicated a child that was 16 years old. And it's funny to me how we, in certain groups, that we harbor seemingly criminals, because look at James Brown. Was he not caught in bed with Tammy Terrell at the time she was 16 by her mother? He was in bed and sexually assaulted her, and not only, but he physically assaulted her too. And that is on record, had witnesses. But we still appraise and cherish him. So we can't be hypocritical in these things. I hear what you're saying. But we can't pick and choose. It's got to be fair and justice across the board.
Well, I'm glad you brought that issue up of people who assault people and what should happen to them. First case I'm going to address is the one with Will Smith. And a lot of people were upset because, as you said, this was a physical assault. And everybody saw it. Matter of fact, it's one of those incidences where you remember where you were at when you saw it. It was that profound. Any assault, even though the court case, when there's a court case, when someone does something, it might be that person who's accused, you know, versus the people of the state of so-and-so. But crimes of assault are really against that person that they have injured, even though the court case may say against the people. So when you harm a person, and you have caused injury to that person, what would be the best way to atone for, to make amends for, to remove the damage from that assault? And I contend that our current justice system doesn't help. It causes more harm because it doesn't take into consideration what was the motivating factor behind the assault and what was the injury that this person that did the assault is still harboring, the reason why they assaulted someone else. Now, in the case of Will Smith, he had just come out with his book, Will, and he had talked a lot about how, as a child, he was emotionally scarred by watching his father beat up his mother, and how he felt like, as a little boy, he was being a coward because he couldn't step in and stop it. So one might presume that this was still part of his nature, the feeling that I must not be a coward or appear to be a coward if someone seems to injure someone I love. Now, I'm not making excuses. I'm saying that when you have
it is an excuse. It is an excuse.
There are never excuses, but there are reasons. People don't just do things. Everybody who does something is motivated by something. And if you don't fix the something that motivates you and all you do is punish, it doesn't make it go away.
He's got a mental illness. And see, it's the legal. You ask the question, the legal way, and we live in a nation of laws. Some people think they're unfair and unjust. There's ways to change. But at the time that it happened, the legal way that was accepted by the people of the state was for a punishment, a sentencing, and a carrying out that sentence. I mean, you can't do it any other way. Because not only are you looking at him, you got to look at the victim, too, because the victims never think you are punished enough. And the victims are citizens of the country. Everybody comes up with all these excuses and alibis once they've been caught. But they didn't think about that before they committed the crime. That's just the way I see it. That's the way a jury sees it also. That's the way the people of the state say, well, you know, we're going to have these things go down, so we need to come up with legal remedies in order to feel satisfied. And the way to feel satisfied is to sentence this person to time in confinement or worse than that.
The assumption is if someone has caused pain, then they should receive pain likewise, and then that will be a deterrent for them causing pain in the future.
Oh, yes. Isn't that what the Bible says? An eye for an eye. And this is a Christian nation where I hear some people talk. You look at the vast majority of numbers of blacks that's involved in organizations like Church of God in Christ, Southern Baptists, Black Catholics.
Yeah,
so
well,
they,
you know,
use that
Bible,
doctrine.
That's what they believed. But it didn't work then, and it's not working now. So at this point, you know, if you keep doing the same thing and doing it the same way and expecting different results, what do we call that? Insanity. What we believe
No, it's not. Let me tell you something.
What we've been doing doesn't work.
It depends on the level of punishment. Because you see some societies, African societies, what do they do? They eventually get rid of their problems in a way
and
where it doesn't come back again.
So now we have a condition where people have abused those that they feel did wrong and sent them away to be further abused and take the pain of the abuse with them. So they then become greater abusers. So what we should learn is that idea of hurting people because they hurt people does not solve the problem. You might think you're going to get satisfaction out of vengeance, but it doesn't.
What do you call a hurt? How do you describe the hurt? When you tell a child that has done go to your room and stay in your room, is that hurt? When you put a prisoner in prison where they got a regimen that they got to carry out, I mean, they're not supposed to be beaten, but some crimes bring about lethal results, whereas their lives are taken. So they're not being hurt when they are told to go physically hurt. They might be mentally hurt, but they're not being physically hurt, physically beat when they're put in a confinement and made to carry out a regimen daily for a period of time, a number of years.
So just like telling your child to go to your room, okay, you stayed out past curfew or you lied to me, go to your room. Going to their room has no meaning unless what is happening in their room is something that gives them an understanding as to why they should not have done what they've done. just like going to prison does not help a person understand why they should not have done what they have done, what was inside of them that was misshapen that caused them to cause harm, and what will be changed inside of them so that they no longer commit that act once they're let out of their room or let out of their prison. Just sending someone away doesn't fix the problem inside of them. You have to fix the problem inside of them. What we do when we send people to prison is create even more problems for them. So if this is someone, whatever wounded soul, whatever misshapen person, whatever abused child commits a crime and they go to prison, but they don't deal with what was inside of them,
anger, rage, whatever made them hurt themselves,
then just going away to be punished doesn't fix the problem. They come out even a worse person and do even
not
more
only do
harm.
The victim, but not only do the victim suffer.
Going to not do the do anything worse because they don't want to go through pain again. That's our assumption.
Yeah,
but if that were, we wouldn't have these. If that were
when
true,
you send that child, when you send that child to his or her room, and you take their PlayStation away from them, when you send that child to his or her room, and you don't allow them to go outside and play, when you sit that child down in a chair and made to listen to you explain, is that not hurting them, as you describe? So when you put that prisoner
hurting
in jail,
that's not
no physical beating.
Well, that's another thing. So we're believing as a society that if a child does something that we find incorrect, we should give them pain. We should hit them, slap them, beat them. And we think that that's going
no,
to be
what
the
you
term.
Have. What
but
you
it
have
isn't.
Is a
it
compendium.
Teaches them how to lie you, about what they've done wrong. You, it doesn't teach them why the thing that they did was wrong and who it harmed. So that doesn't help. Just like punishment.
Well, you
punishment
have a level. You have a level of what's called compendium. You start off with the least damaging, and finally, the death penalty is the most damaging because they have went out and committed a capital a crime where they took somebody's life. Where the punishment of that is for you to give your life. It's a compendium. First, they put them on a bench. One, you sit on a bench. Then it works its way up to 30 days in jail, confined. Carrying out daily a routine that's prescribed that they normally would not want to do, but they have to do it. You got to iron your clothes. You got to work in the laundry room. You got to work in the kitchen preparing the food. You may even have to work on a yard detail or a gang detail. That is the prescribed punishment. And if those prescribed punishment don't seem to correct the person, you could guarantee they're going to go out and do something more heinous that would bring about a more devastating punishment.
So our mistaken belief that the more severe the punishment is, the less likely it is the person is going to commit a crime. But if that were the case, then we would not have these astronomical figures of violence, crime, murders. They would stop because people would fear the punishment, but they don't. Because when they commit the act, they don't expect to be punished because they don't expect to be caught. And if they were to receive punishment for killing someone, that punishment still wouldn't bring back the person that they killed. So the punishment is actually useless. What we want is to
prevent
the
act. I don't think it is. I don't think it is because when somebody commit a crime like this guy down in Atlanta, they don't want to go back to jail. So guess what they do? They run. They run when they hear the siren. They run when they see the police officer. If they did not fear going back to the punishment, they would sit there and try to throw out the excuses in a dialogue between them and the arresting officer, hopefully that they would listen and not send them back to jail. But that's not the case. In their mind, they don't want to go back to jail because they know that it eliminates their freedom of doing something that they do every day. They don't want to go back to jail. That's why they run.
So not wanting to go back to jail is not the same thing as not wanting to commit the crime that violated someone else. Because you can avoid jail by avoiding getting caught. But what is needed is for them not to do the crime and not to want to do the crime. And that's what actually would change the society. If what is inside the person was changed, it was transformed so that they no longer had the desire to cause pain to someone else.
You're right. You're right. That's why it comes
hurt.
That's why you give the different levels of contendum to the child. First, you tell them you can't get no ice cream. Then you tell them you can't watch TV. Then you take their PlayStations away from them. Those are mild levels of punishment that would instill in them, I don't want to get that done no more. I don't want to lose my ice cream privileges. I don't want to not be able to go out and play. So when a child becomes an adult, it's silly to tell them they can't have no ice cream. So you got to up the level of punishment to try to get it into them. And usually at that time, it's too late.
That's true. So let's say a child does something like they steal something, and they're 6 years old, and they've stolen a toy from another child and don't want to give it back. And you want to teach them that it's wrong. So you want to punish them for what they've done. So you send them to their room, you take away their toys and say you can't play outside for the next 2 days. And you feel like, okay, I've punished them for stealing. Now, they may not want that punishment anymore, but have they learned why they shouldn't steal? Have they understood why they should not steal? If that doesn't happen, then what would happen the next time is that they steal something and they make sure you don't find out about it so that you can't punish them. That's not the same thing as them choosing not to steal. That would be solving the problem. If they choose not to steal because they understand how it hurts someone else and they understand that they would not want to be hurt in the same way, and they understand that they should want to have more pride in themselves by not being seen as someone who lies and can't be trusted. They have to understand from the heart, and then in the heart, they choose not to steal. That solves the problem, rather than having to keep escalating punishments because they never understood the ethical behavior behind not stealing. This is why punishment doesn't work, because it doesn't change the heart of the person who does the wrong. It simply makes them figure out how to avoid getting caught so that they won't be punished. So you have many people who manage to not get caught. They learn how to be expert thieves. They learn how to be expert rapists. They learn how to be expert liars. But they don't stop the criminal behavior. They don't stop the hurtful behavior. They simply become skilled at not getting caught. And so they're still injuring people. So the problem still exists. Punishment doesn't solve the problem if it doesn't stop the behavior. What we need to do is help people to change what's inside of them that causes the harmful behavior. That's what keeps a society safe, not punishing people after they've hurt somebody, because the person that they hurt, now they're hurting, and they're going to go out and hurt someone else unless we address what's hurt inside of them.
Yeah, but how do you know what's hurting inside of them unless they come to you and admit that they've done a crime? And at that point, you're supposed to report it to the authorities. Here's a person that's making a confession to something that they've done that was criminal. You're supposed to commit it to that information to the authority. Now, here's the point. The punishment does work. I used to have my grandson do homework. He went to school, and he came home to my school. And, for instance, math problems. He had 100 math problems to do. And if he got them all right, he's going along, working toward 100, and all of a sudden he hit number 80. If he hit number 80, he had to start all over. And what that done, not only it put more skill into his little brain, but it also set into his mind there's a goal that we set and we got to achieve. Now, people say, oh, you know, you are being so hard on. Because I done the same thing to his mama. But also, I used to work with him in baseball. I'd hit him 100 ground balls, and he missed number 80. He had to start all over. He loved to have ground balls hit to him. But if he missed number 80, he had to start all over. He didn't mind. He loved it. So what's the difference? It's the same analogy.
You're developing a skill by having them learn the right way to do something and doing it the right way over and over and over again. As opposed to, say, like if he missed number 80 of the ball and you whacked him 80 times, would that help him become a better ball player? Of course not.
Oh, wait a minute. I got an answer for that, too. You put your kids out there to play football, and if the team, a squad don't get it right, the coach say, take 3 laps around the field.
Yeah, but even
that. Is that not physical punishment?
Well, they're athletes, so if they're exerting more physical effort, they're going to get stronger bodies, which will make them better athletes. So it's still not a useless punishment causing them pain. It's actually helping them to develop stronger bodies, which is the whole purpose of athletics. We got to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to take a look at this process of healing the hurt as opposed to simply punishing the crime, because criminal behavior tends to be generational. And what we're doing to people is not helping stop the pain. So what is a better response to someone who violates someone other than causing them pain? How do we stop it from being passed down from parent to child to child to child? We have to change something. We'll be right back after this break. Going to keep your mic open. And then, of course, if there are those who are on our switchboard, if you'd like to join this conversation, simply press 1. We'll open your mic and get your thoughts. And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325, and press 1. That lights your number up. We know you have something to say. And if you are listening and want to join us on Facebook, go to The Female Solution on Facebook or YouTube and write in your comments, and we'll share them with our listening and viewing audience. And we'll be right back after this quick break. So stay with us.
Crime in Chicago continues to increase. Communities and politicians must come together to make a change. No one person can solve these problems by themselves, but I believe together we can make progress. Let's provide job training, economic growth, and invest into our 77 community. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for Mayor.
Hallelujah, greetings in the spirit of Wayo and Yah Shalom. Wayo means we are one. Yah is Hebrew sacred name for God, and Shalom means peace. I'm Evangel Mamadi Love Yah Nubian, and I'm inviting you to join me every fourth Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. Wisdom with Mamadi. Call in number 515-605-9325. Wisdom. Women in support of daughters on motherhood preparation. And spiritually speaking, men who do the will of Yah are mothers too. As a Montessori educator, author, activist, international award-winning poet, and ordained minister, females, I want you to say farewell to all things, seen and unseen, that prevent your potential. you bring forth life and give birth to babies. A kid is an animal beast with four legs. A child is a human being person with two legs. Facts can change feelings, but feelings cannot change facts. A mother teaches love. Love is the arm that reaches out and holds people, places, and things together. That's what Wisdom with Mama D is about. Join me every fourth Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. Call in 515-605-9325 to share your wisdom and love souls into shape. Remember, mother's farewell. If you don't, your child won't. And if he doesn't, society is abused. Females, you are global transformers with the power to change this world. Use it.
Global Radio TV Show. Today is Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Dr. Debbie, of course, being a very much needed counselor and advisor, is handling a situation with a patient this morning. And what we are doing is continuing the conversation about ending generational curses. When we see behavior going from parent to child and to the next generation, how do we stop it? So often pain is passed down from parent to child because abusive behavior is passed from parent to child. And when someone who has been abused abuses someone else, we call it criminal behavior, and we punish them, which doesn't stop the cycle of pain. It only accelerates it. That's why we have generations of populations in prison that are grandfather, father, and son, all doing time for having hurt someone. So is the system of punishment really helpful, or is it causing more pain? And then you remove a parent from a home, and you remove guidance from a child, and then they are vulnerable to other people who may abuse them. And then they become that person full of rage and anger who commits a crime. It's not helpful. So we're going to open up the mic. One more comment, then we're going to open up the mic for 706-202, and after you, 111111. But go ahead, Bianca, you had another comment?
If you're saying that it's genetic, because that would be what you're saying, that you're saying one generation or one age, one child to adult, and that adult have a child, and that child go to an adult, then maybe that strain needs to be sterilized where they can't bring any more genetically defective members into society.
Well, misbehavior is learned and then taught. So if you have a household where people are beating each other, that's not in your genes. That's what you learn to do. That's how you learn to relate. It's
well, you
got to
remove.
Down genetic.
You got to remove.
Another environment where that doesn't happen.
You got to take them out of that environment. Don't let them go to that class where they teach in school, quote-unquote, critical race theory, because it's developing a hatred within their mindset. You can't let them expose them to that.
Well, what do you do in situations where people have experienced hurt? Do you not talk about it? That's the same thing as having an abusive parent or grandparent or uncle, and no one will express what happened, and so people don't understand.
Oh, I can tell you what to do.
Own behavior. But let me open up a mic.
And we'll continue to talk about that one, because I do believe that black people do a lot of blaming of white people for their condition, but simply blaming somebody doesn't fix what you're doing inside yourself. So that in itself doesn't help. It just keeps you angry at someone. So 706-202, Grand Rising, introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience and give us your thoughts about ending generational curses.
Assalamu alaikum and greetings to my brother and to Dr. Debbie Green. I tuned in a little late, and I came in the part, and the brother was talking about the repetition with the young boy and the repetition of doing something. But looking at what the topic is generational curse. What I hear the brother spoke to is what's called epigenetics, is that it's proven that, you know, we're coding in our DNA and things that's coming back from our first captives that came here, and the things that were done by white narcissists. And what we're seeing is that we have been trained in order, just like you do that repetition, if you keep beating a person down to where that person is trained to not come to the front door but go and build a back door so he can come in and please his master, then what we're needing is how do we deprogram, how do we decolonize the mind? Because education is forcing into you a belief system that is not conducive of what you were born in your purpose. It comes from the word inducere, means to bring out and to make grow. Child in the womb is already carrying the next generation in their body before they come out of the mother's womb. And how we interact with that child programs the next generation. We in indigenous teaching say we do and we say for the next seven generations, because whatever we do and say affects the next seven generations, and we see it today. We see these generations, and how do we break these generational curses? We have to reprogram. Number one, ourselves, in that we have been taught not to, we have this double consciousness. And I'm reading a book, an excellent book, by The Fear of Black Consciousness by Lewis Gordon. Excellent book, because he talks about the colonization, the same thing that they do in red skin, white mask, the same thing that France Fanon did in black skin, white mask, the psychological programming that has been done to a people makes them feel what Wade Noble says is power is the ability to define someone's reality and to make them to believe that which is not their own. How do we change the program? By changing the generational self. Because I did a rites of passage with 10 men from the age of 22 to 47, and each one of those men, when they came back off of that four-day quest, came back and sat and said that my ancestors, because we were out and put them on a mountain, and the ancestors and creator told them, you have to go back into the community and begin to break that male generational curse of being an abuser, being a user, being unfaithful, because it starts with the person. Once you begin with self, then you can help someone else. But if you don't help you, you can't help someone else.
So how do they go about getting people to stop the behavior? I mean, those maybe they've had
number one, identify
the people who abused women. What was the process of changing that behavior? Did they inflict pain on them? Did they fuss at them? How did they change what was inside of them so that they would not engage in that behavior?
And what it was is that in one brother saying, even okay, I give you an example of myself. I've been in recovery, and now the thing was is my father was an alcoholic. His father was an alcoholic. And so in that part of them being that alcoholic, I learned that behavior by watching my father and the things in which he did. I turned around and said to myself as a young boy, I'm never going to be like him, but guess what I did? I saw it. I became it. The thing that happened for me was, is I see the destruction of my life. Even when I came back from Vietnam, I was already messed up when I went to Vietnam. I had stabbed my first man child at 7 years old. So I knew about pain and doing things to do certain things to people. So the thing that I was able to do at 30 years old was to be able to go into a treatment and learn that this disease that you have be cured is not totally cured, because if I go pick up a drink, I start back 40 years ago when I stopped drinking. I will go right back to that same point. But learning that I don't have to go there, I can make an ability to change and believing in a power greater than myself. And believing in that power, I was able to start gaining some spiritual insight into who this man was to be. I didn't come on to be an alcoholic. I didn't come on to be a sperm donor. I didn't come here to be an abuser and a liar and a cheater. There are other things that are possibly in me, too, and I had to find that. And that was an inside job. Then I had to have a vision of how I want to see myself in order to see how I want to see my people. And those were the ways in which I was able to work with that.
So what was it that made you decide you didn't want to be a cheater, an abuser, and all those things? What was it that made you
pain.
Decide, I don't want to define myself by
pain.
This anymore?
Pain. Pain has two things. Pain is going to either kill you or you change. Pain is the motivating. Pain that I was causing myself is why I was doing what I was doing to myself, from the pain that I saw and got from seeing doing the things that I saw other men doing. And so in that part of that pain, I decided that I didn't want to die. But I told myself in my commitment in that hospital on the West Side VA and in the class, they said there will be one person that will be able to get this program and change their life. I told myself I'm going to get this program, but before I take that drink, I will blow my brains out before I go back to that pain again. I made a contract for myself. I'm killing myself doing that. Why not just go ahead and put myself out of my misery?
Wow.
Yeah, pain has a way of changing people's mind, like I was telling you earlier. Whether you take a child's PlayStation from them, make them go to their room, or tell them they can't go out to play. And, you know, here's another thing, too. You talk about epidemiology. Africans on the continent committed crimes. They caused pain. They caused hurt. They caused all those things. And apparently those societies used their method of trying to stop that. And the ultimate way to get rid of those problems was to sell them off. And
but
then maybe...
But Bianchi, look at what has happened as a result of that method. Look at the worldwide mess that they made. That was not a solution.
No, it did not, because they eliminated their problem at the time, Naima.
And they created more problems, because what the problems that they have now, still the same problems.
The majority of us don't cause problems.
Insensitivity, cruelty, all of these things that are still there on the continent, they're still there.
No, here we go.
It just spread it.
But that's their society, and they have been doing those methods for time immemorial, and it's been that's how they come down to the determination. Just like this man here said, he was causing the pain on himself. It wasn't nobody else. It was he.
Point. There's a difference between you recognizing that you are causing yourself pain and it hurts you because you also realize you're hurting others, therefore you don't want to do it. There's a difference than someone else inflicting pain on you and you still not realizing that you're hurting yourself and others. There's a big difference. When you don't realize
believe in voodoo?
Pain.
You believe in voodoo and curses?
Do I believe I know that there is an energy that people can use if you are at that lower vibration.
Absolutely. So we're talking about people here, blacks here today. This is what we're talking about. Probably a lot of others too. You have to do the study. They have been given these intergenerational curses. My wife told me about that. Because she, her family, her tribe has had those experiences with the Ashanti. So if you can't beat them and they do harm to you, then you get your divine people, your divinity, and they cast curses. And those curses, the sins of the father will follow the son. If you believe in them in one instance, you got to believe them in all.
We'll hold that thought. We're going to open up some more mics because you do have a lot of people believing that they don't have power over someone else's negative energy projected at them, but it only works if you are also on that low vibration of the negative energy. It does not work if you are on a higher vibration. It does not work. It does not work. It does not work. Let me go to another caller. Just hold that thought. We're going to come back to that. Area code 111111, and then we're going to go to 773-737, and then we're going to go to 773-263. So everybody hold on. You'll get a chance to speak in just a moment. Okay, 111111, what are your thoughts about, introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience, what are your thoughts about ending generational curses? Is it epigenetics? Is it something you can't fix in yourself because it's in your genes, or can you choose to stop? What are your thoughts?
Grand risings, everyone.
Grand rising.
And good morning as well. You know, it's really, when I run it down, first of all, the brother spoke before, he was correct about how you can direct yourself. But, you know, really it boils down to conscious versus unconscious. For example, what happens is there's media marketing, music, and all that that develops people's habits. That's what they wear, what they want to be like. It creates their negative behavior. As we can see in fashion, when all of a sudden black people who create the best fashion, all of a sudden the fashion is the way your pants down below your whatever. Where did that come from? What type of behavior is that is being created? Yeah, like the negative cowboy versus Indian stuff we saw on television that they promoted. So today, you talk about generational. It was carjacking was not generational. Today, you have young people carjacking their mothers and grandmothers. What type of behavior is that? Also.
So where do you think that originated?
That's an example. That's not epigenetic. That's something that's created because somebody's got some video game out, and they can steal cars and do all this stuff, so it advances to let's rob grandma. So, I mean, it's not behavior, but it's your mentality. What makes that you can just take somebody's car? I just wanted to add one piece, though. Because, see, society is too self-absorbed. They got the me, mine, I, and that's all they think about is the focus. Not we, us, and our, that's collective, thinking about helping all of us out. So society creates that dysfunction. A generational curse. I've seen parents give their children church, all these sort of things in advantage, even directed, but they turn around and go astray. That's not generational when somebody's telling you what to do and you're being disobedient purposely.
So let me ask you this question when it comes to the carjackers. Something inside them doesn't feel bad about hurting people. That means something in terms of their ethics was not developed. And we're finding that many of these young people who are finding it fun to follow a video game where you point a gun at someone and take their car, these are not people coming from loving homes where parents are teaching them ethical behavior. So what is the appropriate response to a child that doesn't have empathy inside of them and doesn't have respect for elders inside of them? Is jail and perhaps, you know, what happens to children when they go to adult jail, sexual assault, beatings, what tends to happen when you're the young person in a jail of grown people. Is that the appropriate response? Would that be a deterrent to them doing this? Or would they come out a worse person after having been abused and assaulted? What is the best response to those young people committing those crimes?
Well, that's really interesting. I mean, you know, the only thing I can say is this. You know, it really boils down to conscious versus unconscious. So then when we're conscious, I can look the other way and drive by with my tinted windows. I get out the car and walk among them and actually engage with them and talk to them about their own lives and what they want. They're not my children, but somebody's got to talk to them. Everybody else seems to be afraid. Oh, look at how they look. I just talk to anybody.
Yeah, they're
Why
afraid.
I talk to somebody. I mean, what's
so fear? Your
what are you afraid of?
What have they told you? And their conversations with you, what have they told
you? You said, what is the solution, right? You said, what's the solution? The solution is conscious people like us that aren't afraid of anything because fear doesn't even exist. We have greater love. We go and help them. I live in a neighborhood that would consider bad. They shoot people in the head just sitting in a car. I live there deliberately. People say, well, why do you live there? You can move in some other neighborhood. Well, no. I'm going to be part of the solution right here where all these problems are. Number one, I'm not afraid. Ain't nobody going to do nothing to me anyway because I'm not afraid. I have no fear. They can't threaten me with a gun. What difference is that going to make? I'm just going to tell them, go and take my life. The guy walked away. You know? So it takes conscious people to step in and try to start some sort of seed because they use television and all that 24 hours a day with the music and everything to control their minds and tell them what to think. You got to interrupt that. Otherwise, the music's going 24 hours. You got 500 channels going 24 hours a day. When does it stop?
So what do you say to a child, a young person who doesn't have any bad feelings about hurting someone? What do you say to change the heart of that child so that they are no longer the person that everyone fears because they find it fun to engage in criminal violent behavior?
They are most likely they end up in jail. And I don't know if that's an improvement, but they asked for something where they bring in the police and that to curb their behavior. What we have to do is listen to them and hopefully have conversations to redirect their thinking because obviously they're not conscious. Who's conscious that takes something from someone else? We're so busy giving and helping people gain when we're in conscious land. That's what we're about. But these people are taken from somebody, so they don't even have any consciousness. They don't have any inner peace. Otherwise, why would you do that? Look at your mind. It must be messed up.
You talk about being conscious. Let me give you an example. See, I, as a grandfather, and also coming up as an adult, I didn't put myself in a position of exposure. In other words, I knew that I was not just living for myself. I didn't go out to the taverns or to the clubs. I didn't do drugs. I didn't go out and commit because I knew that if I was taken out of the picture, then those that depended on me, well, they don't have that source of teaching and instillment and leading them in the right direction. Now you got several out there that's going to become a societal problem. So you cannot expose yourself to things that would take you out of their life because they depend on you. It's just like if you are working a zookeeper. You've been walking into the cage and you clean the cage up while that tiger sits over there. But one of these days, that tiger is going to attack you. Then what are you going to do then? You're going to call the police, holler for another zookeeper to come with probably lethal weapons to stop that tiger from attacking. This same thing plays out in life amongst humans, too.
But could I share a solution that we use?
No, hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. Hold that thought, because that's very significant. And Bianca, you just really proved my point. If you're putting people in jail and they have children at home, yeah, they're getting punished for a crime, but the absence of guidance for those who they left behind creates a bigger problem for society. So how is that helpful when you've taken away those who could have been a stabilizing, guiding force for the ones who are now out committing crimes? So prison doesn't help the problem.
They put themselves in jail, Naima, because usually a judge would take all that in consideration before they sentence somebody to long-term confinement.
Well, we'll talk about that when we come back. Hold on, and 773-737, you're next, and 773-263, and Baba Kwame has another comment on this solution. We'll be right back after this quick break. We want you to stick and stay. Don't stray away, and if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325. Press 1 when you're ready to speak. We'll open your mic and get your thoughts. We'll be right back, so stay with us.
The Female Solution Global Radio TV Show invites you to an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. Tuesdays, Self-Care with Jody Susan. Wednesdays, Repairing Broken Families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, Health and Well-Being with Beata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. First Saturday, Success Strategies with Jana. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on Relationships. Third Saturday, Move Around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, Wisdom with Mama D. Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata. Call in and comment, 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part of the solution.
What if you could live to be 120 years old and remain active, healthy, alert, and vibrant? Our bodies are made up of cells that are constantly rejuvenating. So if we take proper care of ourselves, we can literally defy aging. Join us every Tuesday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time to learn about self-care from Susan Essentials on the Female Solution Blog Talk Radio Show. Learn how to help your body and your cells feel rejuvenated each day through proper nutrition, sleep, frequency medicine, and many unconventional methods of self-care. I'm Jody Susan. Join me and my amazing guests by calling in at 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak. We'll help you achieve a breakthrough in your health today.
Hey, it's time to take charge of your health. I'm Viata, your holistic life coach, and every Friday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I'm here on The Female Solution to empower you to make choices that will assist your evolution to abundant health. I'm also blogging every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at Soul Purpose Healing, where I bring you a spiritual chiropractic adjustment to bring you back into alignment with our Creator's love, compassion, and wisdom. Join me every Friday morning at 8 a.m. and Sunday evening at 8 p.m. for a time of unity, enlightenment, and love vibration. Shalom.
Our kids are the future and should not be left behind. One person should not decide what is the best for our 77 communities. Politicians must work together for our kids' best interests. They deserve a safe education with resources that meet every student need. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for Mayor.
And we are back. You're listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naeem Latif, co-hosting for Dr. Debbie Green. This is Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green, who is away handling a patient this morning. Very important work that she does. But, of course, we're continuing with her topic today, which is how to end generational curses. Some of the dysfunctional behavior gets passed down from parent to child to child to child, generations of dysfunction, which often lands us in jail. And is that helpful if whatever the painful condition we created does not disappear and we cause more pain? How do we heal the hurt so that it doesn't continue to create more hurt? Let's go to our phone lines. We're going to go back to some of our previous callers, so hold on with your comments. We're keeping your mic open. But let's go to area code 773-737, I believe we have with us. We'll introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience and give us your thoughts.
Hallelujah. Greetings, Global Transformers, Grand Rising. I'm Mama D, and I'm inviting everyone to Wisdom with Mama D tomorrow, noon to 2 p.m., on the Conquering Hate.
I mean Saturday.
Tomorrow is Friday. Yes. Thank you for that. On to join me on Friday, August 27th, my Earth Day birthday is August 28th. But join me, Wisdom with Mama D, noon to 2 p.m. Our title is Conquering Hate with Healing. And revisiting, facing the healing, August 28, 1988, facing the Nazi skinheads and the Ku Klux Klan in Market Park, who sent death threats to me, and we're going to examine that. 34 years later, have things changed or have they remained the same? Now, you were talking about earlier, they were talking about intergenerational epic genetics, inheritance DNA. That's called, some people call them generational curses. It can be measured today scientifically, but behavior is learned, and it can be unlearned. It is written in the Black History Bible book, whose hero is a woolly-haired man with bronze-colored feet to match his bronze-colored face, that you shall reap what you sow. The sins of the fathers are visited on the children throughout the generation. And we can scientifically measure that, as I said earlier, with transgenerational epigenetics and heritage DNA that is causing Black women to die during pregnancy at the three times the rate of white women and twice the rate of Latino women. So many people believe in reincarnation. You were made good, and you're going to keep recycling your life until you get it good. I was in court one day, and the judge said, all problems in the world exist because someone was not taught how to love. Now, I thought about that and concluded maybe they were taught how to love, but they didn't learn the lesson. And the solution is confess your faults against that person that you have injured. Take responsibility for that inappropriate behavior. But the problem is usually these people have enablers. They support the bad behavior. And they decide that that person, whatever you did to them, they deserved it, because they shouldn't have did this or they shouldn't have did that. And they make excuses and the beat goes on. If it wasn't for those enablers, you could step up to the plate and say, I was wrong, and take your punishment, because you should be punished in some kind of way when you willfully hurt somebody else because you think you are more deserving to have life, liberty, and happiness than they are because they're black or they're stupid or they're handicapped or they. But every time you point the finger at they, three fingers come back at you. But what happens is there's no confessing the fault, and there can be no forgiveness of sin without the confession of fault. But people don't want to hear about their faults. They want to hear, tell me the good things about me. Tell me there's none good but the fault. You know, man as the word said, is a few days and he's full of trouble, and he was sorry that he made him. And who is man that you should be mindful of him in the first place? But the part is that if there can be no forgiveness of sins without the confession of faults. And we, a lot of people, they fight harder to be right than for what is right. And you find the cycling of this bad behavior because they don't confess fault. It is wrong.
So, Mama D, Mama D, what I would like to see is a justice system that deals with having people to engage in some type of behavior to rectify the wrong. And I give an example. During the time, you know, when Mahatma Gandhi was handling the conflict between the Hindus and the Muslims and all of that, and I believe a Muslim person killed a Hindu person's son, and he told him what you should do. No. I think a Muslim person killed a Hindu. And so what he told him he should do is find an orphan Hindu child and raise that child as a Hindu, not a Muslim, but raise him as his father would have raised him as a Hindu. And I think a Hindu person had killed a Muslim, and he told him what you should do to atone is to find a Muslim orphan child and raise him as a Muslim, as his parent would have done. So the idea is to do something that actually addresses the hurt that you caused and rectifies the hurt in some way so that you are compensating for what you took away. And that is more beneficial than just saying, okay, we're going to give you the death penalty because you killed someone. Yes, but they're still dead, and their children are still orphaned. So what is needed is that you give back in some way what you took away. So if our justice system was based on compensating the victim, and I think Bianchi mentioned what about the victim earlier, if our justice system was built on the person who perpetrated a crime doing something that compensated the victim, then it would help not only address what that person lost, but also give the person who committed a crime an understanding of what they took away because
that,
they have to
that
give
victim,
it back.
Excuse me for cutting you off. That victim is dead. And he can, it ain't
right.
About him. It's about that person that he took from the face of the earth because he
right.
didn't think that person was deserving to live. And my heart does not bleed for him. Dylann Roof walked into a church and slaughtered 9 people and said, I do not feel one bit of remorse for those 9 innocent people that I killed. We got this little He killed 17 people. The day before he killed the 17 people, he went on the internet and said, "Oh boy, it's going to, I'm giving you a heads up. It's going to be big doings tomorrow. My aim is to kill 20 people in school. That's my aim." And he killed 17 students and wounded 17 other students. You got to.
Well, this is my thought. And Mama TV, we got several calls I got to get to. This is my thought regarding that. Because, you know, a lot of people feel like not sorry. So now this is my thought in terms of what would be helpful if whatever work that he's doing while in prison or whatever, whatever pay would go for whatever work he does, that be given to the survivors of those families, family members that he killed, that they receive the money that he would be. I knew they pay you something when you work in prison, not much, but whatever he does, all of his earnings go to compensate those families. That's what I would think would be something because he may never feel any remorse, but he should pay those survivors.
I think that doesn't take away those who lost a loved one that provides for them. Courts do hand down sentences like that.
But okay, if you kill somebody who was a head of household and a provider, you being dead isn't going to bring that person back. But you working and paying money to that family,
but it'll keep you from killing
somebody else. That does take back some of what you need to be shown
as a deterrent. It will prevent you from committing future crimes. It ain't about you. It's about those people that you slaughtered. It's about the hurt that you caused. And if you get hurt in return, that's what reaping what you sow is all about. The enablers are the problems that make these excuses that for these people that, whatever their situation is, they are alive and kicking, and they have slaughtered other people, and they need to reap the consequences of their behavior. And the enablers
Hold that thought. And then everybody, I'm gonna see if we can open up mics. Let me get a couple more calls, and we're going to open your mics back up. We have some time and get some thoughts. Because here we have an idea of punishment versus some type of recompense for wrongdoing. So I'm going to go to 773-263, then 407-701, then 312-671. Then we'll go back to some of the previous callers if we have time before we go. And 773-263, before you speak, let me read from some of our Facebook viewers. And Mama Joy, Joy Segura says, "The best response I feel is to first understand that this is a cry to the consciousness to wake up. Take the spirit of divine family in your heart, trust and create a network of a family community of love and action through forming block clubs that teach or promote loving your neighbor as you learn to love yourself. Embrace all the children on your block and connect with the block behind you and in front of you. This situation is not an overnight rise because it took time. Let time and love, let us take some time to heal that situation." Most certainly, and I agree with Mama Joy, we have, and she says amen to what you said, Mama D. One of the things that we have to look at, we have a whole lot of children who have not been raised in healthy homes, and a whole lot of parents that are doing time in prison, and that's not helping because they still don't have, and it's been pointed out, they still don't have the parenting. So the society is suffering. So just punishing somebody isn't helping because the hurt that we're causing is increasing. So we got to figure out something else. Let me go to our caller at 773-263, introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience and give us your comments.
This is Rashida Ali. You know, I have been doing some research on the psychological effects of slavery. because it was my belief that the reason why a lot of us have resulted to the explosion and violence is because of slavery. So I believe, and I also had a petition issued a long time ago to create some legislation that could help us to heal. So I found out that mental health can be fundamental to survival after slavery from some research. And I found out some other things about the lack of self-confidence. It said that because of the psychological effect of slavery, that we might lack the self-confidence to take action on our own, for which we do today. And it also says that because of lacking self-confidence to take actions in our own behalf and interest, living with the shame and the stigma of their status as slavery survivors, they might also suffer from PTSD due to the trauma inherent in living in slavery and all the violence and explosions that went with it. That's they found too on the internet at antislavery.org, comma, mental illness. So it also says that the slave trade had a devastating effect in our economic incentive for warlords and tribes to engage in slave trade, promoted an atmosphere of lawlessness and violence. And we still have a slave mentality. And then it also describes what are some examples of mental slavery. Do we hate people of certain religion? These attitudes are examples of mental slavery. They stem from seeing ourselves and others as primary material entities who are struggling to come up of finite resources, whether they're jobs, homes, or other opportunities. So my petition, I hadn't started this research until I discovered the trauma that I was receiving from seeing all the violence in the community and then the violence inflicted on my family. And then I decided to research, because I tried to venture out into growing my own economic stability by being contractual. And I found out that most of our black men didn't want to acknowledge or work with me as an independent federal contractor, because everything I did, they did something to sabotage or destroy. So I thought, I said,
Rashida,
the psychological effect of slavery when the black man had to beat the white, the black woman after the white man had sex with her and she had a baby in her, did it travel down to our DNA? And yes.
Rashida, you know, what you've pointed out, Rashida, is kind of the point that I was making earlier as Pianki was giving the historical reality. I'll call you back. The historical reality that really there was wars going on within the African continent, and just like Europeans did, they sent away their prisoners to America, Africans did the same thing. And you had abusers who sent people away to inflict further abuse. So we know that a lot of the Europeans who came over here had been abused by that system, and they came over here with that same spirit of cruelty and inflicted it on the native people. And the Africans, who ended up, many of them, sold into slavery, they came to not only experience worse abuse, but then, like you pointed out, that violence is still inside of us. That self-hatred is still inside of us. So the problem of people who are hurt and therefore hurt people gets compounded. So if we didn't learn anything, and I agree with what Mama Joy said earlier, you can't heal hurt with more hurt. You have to heal it with love, because simply giving more hurt to people who hurt people makes them just hurt more people. That's what we have in a society. So like your research has shown, you have people that for generations have been traumatized. They left their homeland, came to a place where people who have been traumatized abused them, and then they learned to abuse, and that became a way that we raised our children with abuse, everything from sexual assault to physical, verbal, psychological abuse. We have
exactly,
all of that.
And it's still happening. And
it's
America,
still happening.
In America, the biggest slave owner was a black man, and he did it for his country.
So it wasn't all based on greed. When you don't have ethics, you don't care who you hurt. So, Rashida, I got another call. I want to try to speak before we go. But quickly give us your website before
this.
You got about 10 seconds.
To break free, we need to think clearly and go beyond the mental slavery of our minds by challenging your own thinking. Pay attention to your thoughts and become aware of the effects that certain words have on people, and learn to recognize when you think it's
being corrupt. Be aware of what you're saying and how you affect other people. We're going to see if we can squeeze another call before we got to go. And we got 407-701. Got your mic open. Our dear sister, Viata, coming up tomorrow. Go ahead with your thoughts.
You know what, Naima, Mike Tyson, there's a really powerful interview with Mike Tyson, the former heavyweight champion of the world, that said he spent 3 years in prison, and he said it was the best time of his life. And the guy's interviewing him, what the hell are you talking about? He said, because he had peace like he'd never had before. Now, we know not every prisoner is going to have that peace that Mike Tyson had, because nobody was going to be dropping soap in the shower with Mike Tyson and all that bullshit.
There you go.
But Mike Tyson, the lesson, I think, from his testimony, number one, I so praise Pianki and Kwame for giving their testimonies. Kwame had a mission or an assignment on this earth to go to Vietnam in the worst, one of the worst situations you think you could be in. Some people think prison is the worst, but I would say war in Vietnam was one of the worst. And yet he has come back and giving his testimony and helping brothers to heal. And he's very transparent about what happened to him. Pianki had perfect parents. I was shocked. I was on an L.A. show, and I said, well, you know, we all had imperfect parents. Pianki said, nope, I didn't have imperfect. So you would think only Jesus and Mary would be perfect parents. But Pianki grew up with perfect parents, and he is now giving a testimony of how powerful his life and how influential he's been because of his parents, like you said. So prison, in my opinion, like Mama AZ in Arizona, and I say prison is vacation Bible school. We cannot control the prison system. We can't control the judicial system very much. We can't control this damn medical system and the food system and the educational system. But we can make the adjustments. For instance, if a man goes to prison and he has left children behind with a wife, why don't some of the men who are healthy in the community adopt those children and make a difference? Because we know now that when that man goes to prison and those young boys grow up without a father, they're probably not going to grow up and have the best habits and behavior. So that to me is one of the solutions to men going to prison, leaving children, is the men in the community. Where are the men in the community to adopt those children now who don't have a father? That's one of the solutions. So, but we can't control the prison system. Let's get out of the past. Yeah, masters were raping women, and now we have mulatto children all over the place. We have souls now doing their assignment, and we are here now consciously, as Obadiah brought out, the consciousness is the difference, the consciousness or low consciousness. So tomorrow I want to give a plug for my show.
Well, hold that thought. Hold on a minute, because our blog talk audience is about to go off. So you all need to join us on Facebook, the Female Solution Facebook. We're going to go about 15 minutes over today. We want to continue go to the Female Solution on Facebook, and you can continue the conversation with us. Everybody on the switchboard, just hold on. We're going to get to you. Go ahead, Beata.
I'm going to go into emotional intelligence part four, because all week long, my beautiful sisters, from Monday morning mindfulness to today, we are seeing the need to develop emotional intelligence. And I will be focusing especially on jealousy and low self-esteem and fear tomorrow, how we need to get out of those energies if we're going to have healthier communities, healthier bodies, for to make a difference in our world. That's my topic, emotional intelligence, part four. Yeah, we need a part four, because this week alone has revealed the third-dimensional unconscious behavior and women especially not knowing how to build sisterhood. These brothers are waiting for us to build sisterhood. And so that's what we're going to talk about tomorrow, coming out of the jealousy, that the low self-esteem, the insecurity, and the anger that is keeping us women from being sisters. So that's my show tomorrow. Thank you, Naima, for filling in for Dr. Debbie. We love you. Hope everything's going well. And thank you, brothers, for your testimony. That's what's making the difference, is we all step up and give our testimony without judgment, without anger, without bitterness and resentment. We got to share what we none of us are perfect, but at least share your testimony in the hopes that you might help somebody realize that we're all imperfect, but we're all looking forward to a better fourth and fifth dimension. Thank you, everybody. See you tomorrow morning. Joint rolling early in the morning.
All right. See you in the morning. And if you haven't ever joined Viata in the morning, we're not smoking weed. We are rolling the joints in our bodies so that we can be in good condition, just so you know. But we appreciate you, Viata. And, you know, you mentioned something, and I'm going to go to those who haven't spoken yet. I'm going to open your mics. You did mention something that is critical when, again, we're speaking about how do we end the generational curses. If we have children in our society that are out of control, out of order, because their parents are absent, whether they are drug addicted and doing time because they did drugs, or just simply out of commission because they're alcoholics and drug addicted, those children need parenting. And when they don't get parenting, we see the impact of it in our society. They're committing crimes because they have not been taught ethics. And it's not serving us to simply punish them for not having received love, like Mama Joy said. We have to be the ones who give love to those who don't have it, because either their parents are dysfunctional and abusive or absent. So if we want to stop the generational curse, we have to step in and step up. Let me take another call, and thank you so much, Viata. We're going to see you in the morning. And area code 312-671, thank you so much for joining us. I believe this is Minister Plump. I got a question for you, Minister Plump. You're a man of wisdom, and you've seen a lot, seen war and all of that, and seen a lot of dysfunctional behavior, even from veterans who commit crimes because they're suffering from PTSD. What is a better way to help someone who is in pain because they've been traumatized than sending them to jail so that they cannot function in their families and communities? What do you think is a better way?
We on Yashalom, Grand Rising, and Assalamu Alaikum to you, beloved and family. Yes, we can. First of all, you have to use a PMA attitude about our shortcomings. And our shortcomings is a problem which creates hate. And hate is a self-destructive type of way of life. You know, I think about often the Honorable Mayor Harold Lee Washington said, we must plump the whole community. So I decided, what does that really mean? And the acronym is peace, love, unity, marketing people. And we must educate ourselves to each, facilitate ourselves to each part of peace, love, unity, marketing people. And that means care for yourself as you would care for others. Hate is a way of life that is negative. The PMA is positive, and that's the greatest inspiration that a person can do and learn better, know better, and do better. Get the inspiration of God, God's will only. You know, think about what God will do in any and all situations. And one of the most important thoughts is, as you all said, is to heal thyself with love. And a healing is really 23, like me. So you have to learn that because you are a human being, that you're not any better than another human being. And therefore, your life is valuable and very valuable, and we should respect, and respect is everything, life. We should respect not only yourself, but also others. And then think in a positive way that you can be a part of the solution instead of the problem. I thank God again, we entered to win for the female solution. And as a result, we have our leadership training meeting at 3515 South Cottage Grove from 2 to 4 p.m. today. And people can reach me so they can get in at 312-671-2773.
Well, thank you, Minister Plum.
You.
I appreciate the work that you're doing, and continue to have your prayer sessions. I believe that's on Saturdays, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And all of the work that
that's at,
is helping to change the hearts. And when is that?
That is at Harold Washington Park District with our president, Darva Watkins, and that's from 2 o'clock. I mean, from 12 o'clock to 2 o'clock every Saturday. And we must pray in season and out of season. And Yahshua, who most know is Jesus Christ, is the reason. Because, you know, the greatest thing that Jesus said to the people was, Father, I forgive them, for they know not what they do. And that's a healing. See, that's a healing concept. And the healing is not for the person that did wrong. The healing is the person that forgive. So they got to keep being real and keep forgiveness in their heart, mind, body, and soul, and their spirit. Thank you very
Absolutely.
Much.
Thank you so much, Minister Plump. Well, I think that what he said is at the core of what we have to learn. Simply causing someone pain because they hurt you doesn't heal what was in them that made them hurt you in the first place. And simply threatening punishment isn't a deterrent to them hurting someone else again. It really isn't. If it was, we wouldn't have our prisons full of prisoners. Let me see if I can go to, I'm going to 706-202 and then 773-977. You'll have the last word. Make it a good one. 706-202, I believe this is.
Yes, I dropped and I called back
Kwame.
In.
Oh, yeah.
The part that
okay.
I'm hearing, the part that I'm hearing is a baby cries to let you know that something is wrong. And the thing that happens is that when you give it attention and love, and what we're seeing is the word crime, is to cry me. That person is crying because it wasn't given the love that it needed. So it's reaching or hurting. And so hurt people hurt people. The thing that I see what happens, and this is something that brothers have done with groups I've worked with, is that we take the youth out, take them off of the block. What's blocking you is being in that environment. Put you in an environment of natural energy in nature and create what is called oasis, our ancestor spirit and service. Our ancestors are in these forests. And the forest is nothing but a cell. You behind bars. You behind trees when you come in nature. And so you looking at a forest, which is a community, and you take that person out of that environment and you bring them into Mother Nature. Bring it back to its mother, because you're in an urban which says you're banned from nature. You're banned from your mother. These are orphan mentalities that happen with these young people and adults too, because they're banned from a natural way of feeling and getting and receiving energy. And the court system, the thing that you're talking about, prisons, every tax dollar, every time you get taxed and your dollars go to building those new institutions, what they're doing now in the court system is they're creating behavioral camps that they're sending their children to through the court system, and the courts are paying. Instead of sending you to prison, they send you to a place in nature where that child is taken out of that environment and given instructions on how to be a better human being. These are the tools that we have to begin to use, because the recidivism rate is a revolving door. Because the first thing you have to understand is, yeah, they said Emancipation Proclamation, but the thing was, they gave you the 13th Amendment, which the 13th Amendment says neither slavery nor indentured servitude if you are duly convicted of a crime. That cry for me to be free is what they stopping by putting that into place. When you say a crime, that's a person that came out of a womb with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and they stop it. The sister was correct, because post-traumatic slave syndrome is part of the problem, but the whole part is that we are in prison between our ears. We're not, just because you have a person behind bars, That child, that woman, that man, that mother, that father are in prison also. So you got
the
a million
family.
People, and that means you have to add that those people that love that person that's in prison, they're in prison too.
Yes. So, and less prison is a place where healing can take place, like Viata mentioned what happened with Mike Tyson. Well, if you're in solitude and you can meditate and go within and recognize what was misshapen in your soul that caused you to harm others, then it can be an experience that is helpful. If you can come out of prison better than when you went in, then it's helpful. But if you're going into an institution where people are abusing and you're angry, then that's not going to help, and it certainly is not going to make you better when you come out. So what we would like to see is a situation where if people could have a more peaceful, pleasant, loving environment in prison. And I know those who say, no, they need to be punished because they hurt people. But hurting someone doesn't make them better. It just doesn't. It might give you a sense of vengeance because, well, now they're in pain. But, I mean, what Minister Plump said is really the spiritual attitude that we must have if we're going to fix the problem. We must forgive those who are at the level that they're at because they've been hurt, and then help them heal so that they're not continuously hurting people. That is a higher consciousness way to address it, but you can only understand it when you reach a higher consciousness yourself and you realize that people are only reflecting what has happened to them. If we can have compassion for people who are hurting people because they've been hurt, then we can keep them from continuing to hurt people. That really does create a change in the society. And I understand what Mama D is saying, because there are a lot of people who were very angry at the church people who said right away, oh, we forgive Dylann Roof, and Dylann Roof was not sorry that he hurt those people. And he may never be sorry, but at least if we're going to do something that addresses what he did, it should be that he compensates those families that he hurt with the energy that he is putting forth, as long as he's drawing breath. Him simply being taken off the face of the earth, that doesn't bring anybody back, nor does that bring the help that those families need now that their loved one has been taken. So if we're going to make a difference in the lives of people who have been hurt, then we need to keep the ones who are hurting people from continuing to hurt people. That's what I would suggest. And I apologize for those on Facebook. Our picture disappeared for a minute. Let me open up 773-977.
Good morning.
Go right ahead.
Good morning. Good morning to all. You know, we're all in this together. All over the world, you know, we are all here for a purpose. I often say that, and I hate to be repeating the same thing, but we're all here for a purpose. We must ask ourselves, you know, am I pleasing God? Thank you, Minister Plump. Everything that I really wanted to say, Mr. Plump just brought it. But are we pleasing God when we walk out of our doors and we look up at the sky and do we say, you know, even if it's raining or the sun is shining, do we say, oh, Lord, thank you for one more day? And then when we come into this day, do we love one another? Do we honor the golden rule? Most people don't even know the golden rule. Do we do unto others as we would have others to do unto us? You know, I have so much that God has done for me in life, I wouldn't dare take the time to really explain everything. But, you know, God has put songs in our lives. He's placed people in our lives. You know, there's one song that says, there is no pain that Jesus can't feel. There's no sorrow he can't heal. I'm sorry. There's no pain that Jesus can't heal. There's no sorrow that he can't feel. And all things work according to God's holy will, not what we want. God made all of us, whether we're one of the 256 different denominations or what. God made all of us the way he wanted us to be. So if we have our people out there like Lori Lightfoot and some others, I'm just not going to take all the time. Everybody knows. But if they're not satisfied with what God has done, then that's on them. Don't try to turn it on us. You know, don't give it to our children, 5 years old and what have you. You know, he's brought us all through. We have to remember that. Know that God is using us. You know, so there's no pain. Whatever you're going through, just know that God is just using you. He's using you as a vessel, because in the end, it's going to be just the way he wants it. So this battle is not yours. It's the Lord's. We always say things we cannot change. And I thank you all for this time. God bless you all. This is Lois here in Chicago.
Well, all right. Well, thank you, Lois. I was ready for Sister Lois to break out in a song, y'all. Well, thank you so much, Lois. We appreciate you so much for your comments. Well, Pianki, I can feel that you have one more thing to say. So we're going to give you an opportunity.
I'm sorry to
start
it off because you go into an extra half an hour this morning, but sometimes things happen for a reason.
Yes,
but here's a point.
Make me stay.
We have to also get over self-hypocriticalness. And I'm going to give you some examples. We constantly go back and make a comparison with the white killer, Daylon Roof, who went into the black church and killed people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, you got to get rid of your self-hypocriticalness, because you had Emmanuel Samuel, who went into a white church several Sundays, and while one Sunday, he went in there and started shooting up white people. And wrote a note, said his intention was to kill 10 whites. Well, you got two cases there that's only separated by skin color. But should they not both be criticized? I heard Mama D make mention that black women have abortions 30 to 35% more than white women. Okay. But what about the black women that they have abortions 30 to 35% more than? Because all black women don't have abortions. Should they not be recognized as not having them is a positiveness rather than relegating it on to somebody else? Think. Look, I got to get going. I don't want to kill my welcome.
Well, I thank you, Bianchi, for that thought that you have shared. And as we know, abortion is a decision that happens as a result of many other decisions that went into the process of two people having an intimate relationship and there not being a welcoming atmosphere for the life that chose to come through those two people. And so can we make any condemnatory remarks at all? Whatever we see in our society, it is a result of our collective mind. Either we are collectively loving or unloving. And when we are unloving in our society, we see the outcome. When we're neglectful of our children, when we're failing to teach them ethics in a way that shows them what love looks like, when we allow our children to experience the pain of abandonment and abuse, when we do not allow people to heal by allowing them to admit they're in pain, then we see the continuation of pain. So if we want to stop the cycle of pain and end the generational curses, the answer isn't to look to someone else to blame for our behavior, but to take responsibility for the choices that we make. And if we're hurt, to seek help and to choose to change what's inside of us that's causing us to hurt ourselves and others. We're all here of our own free will, and regardless of how traumatized our foreparents may have been, we here now today are responsible for the choices that we make, and that includes the choice to get help if we are in pain. We do have to take responsibility for those decisions. So I believe we've got one more comment we want to share with you from Facebook before we leave. And we want to remind you all to make sure you join us tomorrow for Health and Well-Being with Beata, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern. Adjust your time wherever you are in the world so that you can join us live. And then come on back Saturdays with Wisdom with Mama D, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern. And again, adjust your time so that you can join us live for this insightful remembering of what happened, but also seeing an example of how to replace hate with love. That really is our purpose. And we have from Mama Joy, who we will give the last word to, and she says, we must remember that since 1863 and the Emancipation Proclamation, impact on the Confederacy and the Union, the only teachers, 97% were Caucasian. No matter how pure the heart, our ancestors were seeking family connections, and teachers were looking and focused on readying us to enter and be productive in their society. Education of assimilation has been the foundation in the absence of a family-ship blueprint for true human excellence, from being a property of someone else's to ownership. And we, of course, are no longer property. We are, in fact, sovereign beings, and we have the power to choose. So let us choose love, and let us share love with those who are lacking love. That is the solution. I'm Naima Latif. Thank you, Dr. Debbie, for all that you do, and may you continue to do your work in transforming lives. And we'll see you back here next Thursday on Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And until next time, continue to shine your light.
The Female Solution Global Radio TV Show invites you to an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. Tuesdays, Self-Care with Jody Susan. Wednesdays, Repairing Broken Families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, Health and Well-Being with Beata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. First Saturday, Success Strategies with Jana. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on Relationships. Third Saturday, Move Around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, Wisdom with Mama D. Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata. Call in and comment, 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part of the solution.